Okay, so we can continue with the idea of mindfulness of breathing. The way it is explained here, and the way which is the standard way that is explained everywhere in the suttas. And this morning we looked at the idea of how to calm things down, taking it all the way from the beginning all the way to the jhana states, the liberation, the freeing of the mind towards the very end. And now comes the last part, the last four factors, and this is equivalent to the Dhamma Nupassana, the fourth aspect of mindfulness meditation or Satipatthana practice. This is equivalent to that, and we will see that this is mostly about insight and understanding things based on the previous kind of calming down. Yeah, again, the idea that the calming down goes hand in hand with insight and vipassana and clear seeing, the two kind of being two aspects of the same thing here. So let us see what the Buddha has to say about this. And this is how it reads. They practice like this. I breathe in, observing impermanence. They practice like this. I breathe out, observing impermanence. The practice like this, I'll breathe in, observing, fading away. The breathe like this, I'll breathe out, observing, fading away. The practice like this, I'll breathe in, observing, cessation. The practice like this, I'll breathe out, observing, cessation. The practice like this, I'll breathe in, observing, letting go. The practice like this, I'll breathe out, observing, letting go. So this is the this is the way that insight is explained here, or you know, how insight is obtained by observing things in this particular way. And the first part here, impermanence, is anicca. Anicca and observing is anupassi, anicca anupassi. And you could call it observing or contemplating or reflecting or many different ways. Anu passi. Passi is related to passana, which is to see. And anu means something like along with. So you're seeing along with. And that gives an idea of what the contemplation is about. Yeah? It is about looking back on the process you have been through. We've just been through a process of calming things down. And the anupassi is actually seeing that process itself of calming down. And that process gives you the data of impermanence, of fading away and cessation. Because during the process of meditation, this is what happens. Yeah, things are impermanent, things fade away, and eventually things cease. So that gives you the data for what you want to contemplate and reflect on and observe in this last part here. So let's just very briefly just discuss what these four mean, and then see how they apply to the actual sequence of meditation here. So anicca means that things are impermanent, unreliable, uncertain. Yeah, you cannot really hold on to it. It's always going to be it's never going to be stable for you or under control, anicca. And it is kind of the preliminary phase of impermanence. Yeah, the most basic idea that things are not reliable is what this is about. And it's interesting, in the Vinayapitaka and elsewhere in the suttas, the opposite of anicca, nicca, is used in certain ways that kind of gives an idea what the meaning is. And if, for example, one of the things you find in the Vinayapitaka, you find something called the nicca bhatta. Bhatta is like a meal. Yeah, and nicca bhatta means like a regular meal. It doesn't mean a permanent meal. Yeah, impermanent, permanent, because that's it. Can't have a permanent meal. Maybe you can, but it's not a good idea. So the idea of nicca bhatta means a regular meal. It's a meal that you get maybe once a week, that is provided by someone, maybe once a day, once a month or something. There's a regularity to it. So anicca is the idea that things are irregular. They are uncertain. They are unreliable. You don't know what's going to happen next. And this is the kind of the idea of anicca. So impermanent is one way of thinking about it, but it's more kind of, it's more than that. Yeah, the idea of something being unreliable to me has more of a emotional effect. Yeah? If something is unreliable, it is something that you don't want. because we want things that are reliable. That's kind of how we work as human beings. So things are unreliable. Things are changing. Things are always moving. Yeah, and that in itself is kind of a beginning level of insight, of understanding of the nature of things. When we say nature of things, what do we mean by things? What we mean is really our experience. Experience is the ultimate thing that we want to investigate, how we perceive the world, how we experience the world. So it starts off with anicca, and then we have the second factor here, which is viraga, and viraga has like two meanings in the Pali language. And one is the opposite of raga. Raga means like desire or desire, basically. Yeah, especially desire in the sensory realm, but general desire. And viraga is the opposite of that. The V prefix often has the opposite meaning. So it means like non-desire, yeah, or dispassion is one of the translations of viraga. But it also has another meaning, and that is the meaning that is most significant here. It has the meaning of fading away. Things fade away. So it's not just that things are impermanent and unreliable and uncertain, but they fade away. In other words, they have a direction to their impermanence. It's like they gradually disappear. And of course, that is exactly what we're seeing when we do meditation practice, a gradual fading away of things. Yeah, the senses are gradually fading away, the experience becoming more and more peaceful, so the kind of things are fading away from our view. And this is why this is an important point. And of course, that fading away process, it carries on until things cease. Yeah, cessation is the ultimate consequence of fading away. And that is the third one of these contemplations here, is cessation, things coming to a complete end. And cessation is the most powerful aspect of anicca, or impermanence. That is when impermanence completes itself, if you like. And it is there with the cessation that you can really fully understand what impermanence refers to. And that is where real insight becomes possible. It is very hard to get insight just because things are moving and changing. But when things disappear completely and you can't even access them, they are outside of your control, that is where you get real insight. Because it is fully impermanent, fully gone, fully disappeared. There's no kind of doubt anymore as to what is going on. So this is then the ideal way of understanding these things. The point here is that when you understand that kind of impermanence, you also understand the other characteristics. And when we talk about insight in Buddhism, it is always in relation to three things called the three characteristics, the tilakana, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Yeah, the three characteristics. And when you see things as completely impermanent, unreliable, ceasing, you also understand suffering. Why? Because when something is completely gone and you know that you are better off without it, then obviously there was suffering, this other thing was suffering. You don't want it back again. You don't want to get out, you don't want to come out of those deep states of meditation. Unfortunately, you have no choice. You have to come back out again. Oh no, dukkha arising, dukkha coming back. And then also, there's also the understanding of non-self, because one of the aspects of a self, what that makes things a self, is that it is under your control. This is kind of the idea. When something is under your control, that is how you know that it is part of what we call a self. Something which is nothing to do with you, out of control, nothing is not a self, right? Like the moon, the phases of the moon, you would never call the phases of the moon yourself because it's out of your control. There's nothing you can do about it. And the same thing, if something ceases completely, you can't access it, you realize that ultimately it is out of your control and you gain insight into non-self. This is kind of the idea here. So you gain broad insight to all the three characteristics by focusing on impermanence, unreliability, and cessation. And as you do this, as you gradually gain this kind of insight in the three characteristics, there comes a point when you're no longer interested in these things. Craving comes to an end, because you see this again and again. Because how can you crave these things if they are suffering? If they are nothing to do with you? They are just phenomena in the world, nothing to do with the self. of course, eventually you give it up. You no longer have an interest in these things. And this is the last part here, the letting go, right? The fourth of these contemplations here. Anicca, Viraga, Niroda, Patinisagga. Patinisagga is the idea here of letting go. Relinquishing things, craving coming to an end, no longer have an interest in these things. So this is the general idea of insight. So what is it that we contemplate in this way? And as I mentioned before, what we contemplate is our experience, because that is the world for us. The world for us is our experience. Yeah, that's really all we have, is our experience. And so that is what we contemplate. And of course, our experience here is a very particular kind of experience. It's the experience of the process of meditation, where you're watching the breath, things becoming more and more peaceful. And so you look back on that experience, and then you see these phenomena in that experience. What exactly is that experience? Well, all experience is analyzed by the Buddha into the five khandhas, the five aggregates, the five aspects of your personality. We mentioned those before, the form aggregate, the feelings, the perception, the will, sankhara, and vijnana, consciousness. Rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana. Form, feelings, perception, will, and consciousness. All our experience can be analyzed in these five ways, according to these five categories, including the meditation experience. So when we look at our experience of meditation, what we are really contemplating is the five khandhas, because that is really all there is to contemplate. That is what experience is. So what are we seeing? How does this work in practice? What is actually going on? So how this works, and I will give you some examples of how this works. So for example, when you are seeing that the body, first of all, the body is impermanent, right? You can see the changing of the breath is moving, the breath becomes long, short, it becomes, various qualities of the breath, whatever it might be. So there is a general sense of impermanence or unreliability. Parts of the body are there, then they are gone, etc., etc. And then as you the experience calms down, there is a gradual fading away of the body, right? The five senses are here, just another way of saying the body. They are all fading away, gradually becoming less prominent, gradually reducing. The breath is becoming more peaceful. The viraga is happening. You can see it in practice, There's a particular kind of impermanence called fading away, Uncertainty. And then you take that fading away and you take it to its logical conclusion, which is cessation, which happens when you enter a jhana state. It also disappears temporarily before that. You may get a strong nimitta, the five senses are gone, but they're not fully gone. They can still be accessed. If you want to hear, you can still hear. If you want to see, you can see, even though they're temporarily gone. But when you enter a jhana, you can no longer decide that you want to hear. You can no longer decide that you want to see anything. And for that reason, because you cannot decide these things, they are outside of your control. So you see the body impermanent, fading away, ceasing. That is anicca. When you enter a jhana state or a deep state of meditation, you are so happy to get rid of the body. Yay, the body finally gone. Hooray. Because you realize how much suffering there is in the body. So you understand the idea of suffering. And because you cannot access the body, you cannot access the five senses, you understand that they are non-self, because they're complete, just like the moon is out of your control, the five senses are out of your control. There's nothing you can do with them. So this is how you then gain insight into the physical body or the five senses through this process. All you have to do is look back on what happened. It's almost as if you cannot avoid the insight. You can see it's going to be bleeding obvious to you, right? Because right there in front of your eyes. All you have to do is maybe reinforce it a little bit by reflecting on it. Sometimes experience is there and you may have it, but it's always good to reinforce it a little bit, to strengthen it by reflecting on it in the right way. So this is what this is. This is how this works. It's actually very straightforward, very simple. There's nothing fancy about it. It's just kind of being with what is going on. So that is the idea of the body, being impermanent. Another obvious one here is the sankharas, the will, the doing of the mind, the activity of the mind. And the activity of the mind is always experienced as thoughts, as movements in the mind, as things changing. You're looking here, paying attention there, and all of this movement of the mind comes from the sankharas. Which are the drivers of the mind. Because, as I pointed out throughout the sutta when we looked at it before, every stage there is like a calming down. First, the calming down of the body, kaya sankaran pasambati, and that means the calming of the kaya sankara, which in this case is the breath, but it could be considered any process in the body. So the body is calmed down. Then you have citta sankaran pasambati, the mental content being calmed down. And then in the last tetrad of the mind, you have samadhang cittang. And samadhang cittang means that you are stilling the mind. Samadhang is like samadhi. You are causing the mind to kind of attain a state of samadhi, if you like. Everything, so much of this process is about calming things down and allowing things to become still. And so what that means, of course, is that the will is becoming still, because there's the will that creates the movement. So as the movement goes, the will is being given up. The will is disappearing. So you see the impermanence of the will. It is interested in various things in the beginning, moving around. Then it is gradually fading away through calming, ending in the kind of highest kind of fading away, which is the cessation. And then when you are in a jhana state, you cannot will anymore. Will is out, is kind of beyond beyond your ability. You can't do it anymore. And because of that, you understand that it is also non-self, because you can't access it. And you understand that it is dukkha. Because you have let go of the will. And when you have let go of the will, lo and behold, you are far more happy. And you understand that the will itself is a kind of torture. The movement of the mind is a kind of torture. Because stillness is a far more pleasant state than the movement of the mind. And you can see that already to some extent, right? In ordinary meditation, you become a bit more peaceful, you become more calm, and you feel better. And you have an idea that movement, change, all of these things actually are problematic and they are painful. That is a very, very powerful insight. And the reason why it is so extremely powerful, and these are the kind of things that lead to awakening. The reason why this is so extraordinarily powerful is because this is one of the main identities that we have as human beings. We identify with the will. We are the doers. We are the creators of our lives. We are the artists that create things. They creativity is one of the things that we live for. The ability to do what we want, to express ourselves, to eat what we want, or whatever it is. This is such a fundamental part of what it means to be a human being. And when you understand that that very fundamental part that you have identified with for so long actually is suffering, you can imagine what an eye-opener that is. So you enter the jhana and it overturns your worldview. Instead of holding on to something, instead of taking as a self this aspect of reality, the moment you understand it's suffering, you can no longer take it as a self. You have to give it up, and it must give rise to very powerful insight as a consequence. It's good to be aware of this, because then when you come out, it becomes more clear to you. And then maybe the really big insights can come and arise from that. And this is where things like stream entry can happen, when you see these things. Because the identity of the doer is a very important part of who we take ourselves to be. So that is the body, the rupa, and then you have the sankhara. But this is true of all the five aggregates. So, for example, you also have the aggregate of feelings, right? Feelings are happy feelings, painful feelings, and neutral feelings. And you see the painful feelings disappear. Gradually fading away as the meditation improves, and eventually being beyond your ability to feel them. They're no longer possible to feel them. The pleasant feelings are a certain pleasant feelings are disappearing. They become more and more refined. And what you are left with is a very small, narrow band of feeling. And that narrow band is like the very intense bliss. And then the neutral feeling down the track, which comes in the fourth jhana. You're left with a very, very small amount of feeling. Especially when you go all the way to the fourth jhana, all painful feeling, all happy feeling has ceased completely. And that is when you understand that this also is outside of, this too is impermanent, completely impermanent, can be let go of completely. It can cease. And for that reason, and this is kind of the weird thing, painful and happy feelings are dukkha. Yeah, they are problematic. It's much better to have neutral feelings than to have these happy feelings. Especially because happy feelings always go with painful feelings. They kind of go together as a pair. So you know that when there is happy feelings, there must also be painful feelings at some point. So you give it all up. And then it is non-self because it can disappear completely. So you start to get insight into feelings. And in many ways, the insight into feelings are some of the most important insights you can have. And this is also where enlightenment can happen. And you see this in the suttas in many places, like the Diganaka Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 74. You see Venerable Sariputta, this is how he achieved awakening according to the suttas. He was in the boar's cave. The boar's cave is on the way up to the vulture peak, and you can go and visit there even in the present day. It's kind of really interesting. You've done this before. We've been in the boar's cave, and then you read out this sutta in the boar's cave, and it's kind of really cool when you do that. Almost a bit scary. What's going to happen when we do this? So you do that, and that is where he reflected on the impermanence of feelings, and he achieved awakening on that basis. And the reason is because feelings are so fundamental to what it means to be human. Everything we do is driven by feelings. Feelings is what gives life meaning. Without feelings, life is completely meaningless. Everything we do, our values, our purpose, everything is a feeling is at the core of that and what gives life meaning. So the moment you understand that all these feelings are impermanent and out of control and the non-self, then the whole thing collapses, and that's why awakening becomes possible at that particular point. Without feelings, you wouldn't be doing anything. There's nothing to be done in the world. Feeling is the driver of things. And there is perception. Perception is just another kind of how we make sense of the world, in a sense. So perceptions, as we go through the process, they become simpler and simpler and simpler. Initially, we are still percipient of the breath, maybe parts of the body. We are percipient of various things. We can hear things, whatever. And as things fade away, our field of perception narrows down, becomes more and more narrow. And eventually, all that is left is bliss. All other perceptions have ceased. You start to understand that perception too fades away, eventually ceases, and you have a similar kind of insight in regard to perception. And the very last one is consciousness itself. Consciousness is, in the suttas, is always defined as six classes of consciousness related to the six senses. And of course, the consciousnesses are fading away, and when you enter a state of deep samadhi, five of those six kind of consciousnesses are completely gone. All that is left is the consciousness of the mind. So you start to understand some of the impermanence of consciousness itself. And this is then how insight arises. And as you can see, it's kind of obvious, because you've been through the process, you have collected, the data has been collected through the process itself. It is by going through the process, that is where you collect the data. And then when you come out of the meditation, you review the data, and you are bound to see exactly what is happening. There's nothing really mysterious about it. Well, the mysterious, of course, is what happens as a result when you gain that insight. That is kind of the mystery when you become a stream enterer. But the actual process is kind of not that hard to understand. And then, as you do this, and you start to see all the five khandhas in this way, you understand what suffering really is, then you lose an interest in those things. The five khandhas are no longer interesting to you, because the five khandhas turn out to be suffering. When the five khandhas turn out to be suffering, you can no longer crave for these things. You can no longer crave for experience, because experience is exactly what the five khandhas are. You lose your interest in experience, and then craving dies down. Because experience and existence are the same thing, you don't crave to exist anymore. Yeah, existence becomes meaningless if everything is just pain and problematic. Existence itself becomes meaningless to you. You can't crave for it, and so all craving dies down. All craving is gone. And this is the last step, patinisagga, the letting go of everything and craving coming to an end. This is kind of the what is there ahead of you. Are you ready for this? Remember that some of these things can sound very alien and strange, and you wonder what is going on. I'm sure some of you get probably very inspired by hearing this and think, wow, this is really, really good stuff. And but remember that it's just a continuation of what you're doing already. You already have a little bit of insight into these things. You already know that calming things down is beautiful. You already know that. Yeah. And so because you know that, you already have a small insight into what this is about. You know that the fading away of the body is a positive thing. It feels really nice when the body is disappearing. And so you already have an idea what is going on. And so all we're doing here is extrapolating, taking it all the way. And when you take it all the way, that is also when you can expect the highest happiness. So there's nothing all that mysterious about it. It only sounds mysterious in theory, but once you start to experience it, you know what's going on. All right, that is the last stage of Anapanasati, and it is the same as the Dhammanupassana in the contemplation of Satipatthana, of the mindfulness meditations, called maybe the four focuses of mindfulness, or whatever, the four applications of mindfulness. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's mostly a focus on the five hindrances and the seven factors of awakening. Right, so that there the focus is on the five hindrances disappearing. The focus on the causality of the five hindrances, how they arise, how they disappear, and how they cease, and how they come not to be re-arise again in the future. And this is parallels exactly what we're seeing here. You're seeing the impermanence of the five hindrances. You're seeing how they cease, which is cessation here, and how they don't re-arise in the future. That's patinisagga, the letting go of these things. And the five hindrances is just one aspect of the five khandhas. When the five khandhas and our experience is developing, this is exactly what we see in that experience. And the five hindrances, when they're completely gone, they end in the jhana stage, which is what we're seeing here before. So it is just a parallel to that. Seven factors of awakening, same kind of thing. Seven factors of awakening are the sati sambojanga, the mindfulness factor of awakening, the dhammavicaya sambojanga, factor of awakening of investigation of qualities, the virya sambojanga, factor of awakening of energy, the piti sambojanga, the factor of awakening of rapture, the pasaddi sambojanga, the factor of awakening of calm or tranquility, samadhi sambojanga, the factor of awakening of samadhi or stillness, and the upeka sambojanga, the factor of awakening of equanimity. And this is the process of meditation, just as we see it here. If you put the sambojangas, the factors of awakening, you put them next to the mindfulness of breathing sequence, you'll be able to recognize it's the same sequence spoken about in slightly different words. So you're seeing that sequence. You're seeing how the various factors arise, how they fade away, etc., which is exactly what we're talking about now. So there's a very close match between these things. Slightly different language. It would be interesting to put those completely next to each other to see how they match, but not now, because I haven't got that ready. So anyway, so this is how the Satipatthana and the Anapanasati again work together. They are different expressions of the same kind of process that happens within us when we do the meditation. So there you are, and I don't know. It's very interesting. Yeah, I don't know if it's kind of very, really extraordinarily what this teaching is about, and now you know basically the whole process all the way to the end of path in quite a lot of detail through the Anapanasati Sutta. And then the Buddha says, before my awakening, when I was still unawakened but intent on awakening, I too often practiced this kind of meditation. And while I was often practicing this kind of meditation, neither my body nor my eyes became fatigued, and my mind was freed from the defilements by not grasping. So here the Buddha is saying that he too practiced mindfulness of breathing often. but the Sujata has usually here, but the usual translation of bahula is the Pali word, is often or frequently. So he often practiced this meditation. And then you have this kind of strange little thing here, this idea that neither my body nor my eyes were fatigued. And the reason for this, the reason why he says this, is because previously, presumably, he was practicing ascetic practices, and because of that, his body was fatigued. Yeah, there was just too much, and the body didn't like it. So, but the body is okay if you do anapanasati. The body is at ease. The body is relaxed. And the other one here, the eyes are fatigued, and this presumably is because he would have practiced some sort of kasina practices. And the commentary actually confirms that it is a reference to kasina practices. And a kasina practice is a particular kind of device that you use, like a disc, yeah, that you focus on, a disc of color or a disc of earth. And you focus on that and use that as your meditation object. And you look at it until it becomes an image in your mind. And then you kind of use that for your meditation. The Buddha is saying, actually, don't do that. That's what he's saying. Or that just leads to fatigue, it leads to problems. And so he used mindfulness of breathing instead. And for this reason, the kasina meditations are not really talked about in great detail at all in the suttas, because it seems from this that the Buddha to be actually gave them up because they didn't really work. Tormenting the body didn't work either. So then what do you do if you don't torment the body, if you don't use kasinas? Well, then you do mindfulness of breathing. And when you do mindfulness of breathing, the result is, the Buddha says, my mind was freed from the defilements by not grasping. This is the result of mindfulness of breathing, all the way to the end of the path. So then the Buddha, next now, he's going to mention all the benefits of practicing mindfulness of breathing, right? So this is a long list of benefits. So let's just go through them fairly rapidly to see what he has to say here. He says, now a mendicant might wish, may neither my body nor my eyes become fatigued. There's a typo there anyway. And may my mind be freed from grasping without defilements. Let them closely focus on the stillness due to mindfulness of breathing here. Yeah, so if you want to avoid the body being a problem and the eyes fatigued, focus on the samadhi that comes from mindfulness of breathing here. Mindfulness of breathing should be the primary meditation subject, especially the samadhi that comes from that. A mendicant might wish, may I give up memories and thoughts of the lay life. Let them closely focus on this samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing here. Yeah, the memories and thoughts of lay life, these are presumably the attachments that you still have to lay life as a monastic. Maybe you're not getting all the happiness that you want in monastic life. And so you kind of think back in lay life. Oh, lay life, I could eat in the afternoon. Oh, I can't do that anymore. Oh, the dukkha. And then you... So you think about those things in lay life that you can't do anymore, yeah? And that kind of is a problem. So you do mindfulness of breathing, yeah? And it gradually overcomes all of those thoughts. And one of the reasons why mindfulness of breathing eliminates defilements is that defilements of the mind, they need to be sustained, yeah? If you're going to have a desire or even ill will, the only way that can sustain itself is because you fuel that desire. And that fueling of the desire means that you continue seeing the object as attractive. Or if it is ill will, you see the object as unattractive or negative. That needs to be fueled. You need to kind of come back to it again and again. And if you stay with the breath, because you're not applying any more fuel, it tends to die down. So this is kind of mindfulness of breathing. Automatically makes the mind peaceful if you're able to stay with the breath. So you give up memories and thoughts of that household life. That is what all of us are doing here on this retreat, yeah, whether you are a monastic or not. Now a mendicant might wish, may I meditate perceiving the repulsive in the unrepulsive. Let them closely focus on samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing here. Yeah, so this is can be very useful to see the repulsive in the unrepulsive. There are things in life that block your meditation, and if you can see the negative in those things that are not negative necessarily, something which seeing the repulsive in things that block you in meditation, I don't know, attachments you may have, desires you may have, seeing the problem there, it's very, very useful. And this is one of those superpowers of a good meditator, is this ability to change your perceptions at will, seeing the repulsive in things that are not repulsive, and we will see in a second also the opposite, seeing the unrepulsive in the repulsive, right? So that you can deal with any kind of difficult situation in life, regardless of what it is, because you can just see the unrepulsive of it. And then there's even more kind of refined, seeing the unrepulsive in that which is both repulsive and unrepulsive, seeing the repulsive in that both that which is unrepulsive and repulsive, etc. So you have a very malleable perceptions, and you can really use your perceptions in whatever way you want, whatever is required in any particular situation. This is kind of the idea behind this. You meditate perceiving the unrepulsive in the repulsive. You meditate perceiving the repulsive in the unrepulsive and the repulsive. And you perceive the unrepulsive in the repulsive and the unrepulsive. So let them closely focus on this immersion due to mindfulness of breathing. Immersion here being samadhi. Yeah, you have full control over your perceptions. And even one further, a mendicant might wish, may I meditate staying equanimous, mindful and aware, rejecting both the repulsive and the unrepulsive. Let them closely focus on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. Yeah. So, equanimity is very useful, and you can take it when you have these kind of sequences that the last one is the most important one, the most powerful one. So equanimity is really ideally what we are trying to achieve. And also in daily life, not having too much ups and downs of the mind, but having an even kind of mind. This is called also called equanimity, upeka. It's a lower kind of upeka on the path. Having achieved that, now we come to the jhanas. Yeah? And you will see now, it's specifically mentioned here that if you want to achieve the jhanas, mindfulness of breathing is the way. It's one of the few meditation objects are specifically mentioned in this way as being the source of jhana experiences. Now a mendicant might wish, quite secluded from the five senses, secluded from unskillful or unwholesome qualities, may I enter and remain in the first absorption, which has rapture and bliss born of seclusion, while placing the mind and keeping it connected. Let them closely focus on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. So here we have the first jhana. I did explain in brief before what it means, all of these things. Quite secluded from sensual pleasure means separated from the five senses. That is what that means. Vibhicha means separated. Vibhicheva kamehi. Kamehi, kama, is the five sense world. And when it occurs in the plural, it refers to the five senses. So the sensual pleasures here is the usual translation, but it's not entirely clear what is meant when you read it in that way. It means separated from the five senses, secluded from unskillful qualities. Vibhicheva or vibhicha akusalehi dhammehi. Dhamma are like qualities of the mind. May I enter and remain in the first absorption, which has rapture and bliss, piti sukha, born of seclusion. Viveka ja, pipisuka, viveka ja, ja is born. And then this particular rapture and bliss, the viveka ja pitisuka, is a particular kind of joy. Yeah, We have already seen, we've gone through the Anapanasati Sutta, and we have seen all the various stages of joy. We talked about piti already, rapture. We talked about sukha, the bliss. We talked about experiencing the mind, chitta sankhara, the processes of the mind and all of that. All of these things are happinesses already. But this is a new level of happiness that you come here. This is why it's called rapture and bliss, born of seclusion, is a particular kind, a particular very high intensity of rapture and bliss. The vivekaja, the qualifier, born of seclusion, is very important. It points to a particular kind of experience. And so what you see again is this extraordinary sequence of one bliss, one joy, one rapture, more profound than the previous one. Going on and on and on. So just because you have a little bit of bliss in your meditation already, doesn't mean that you have attained jhanas. There's a long way to go. There's more and more, further and further depths to be had. And only when you come to this point, when this basically you are given up your, the whole external world, only then have you come to the first jhana experience. Important to get these things right. But that is not the final point, and there is an even more profound happiness and bliss, and that is the happiness and bliss of the second jhana, and that is called samadhija pitti sukha. Samadhija means born of samadhi, born of stillness. Because only when you come to the second jhana do you get the full stillness. Another depth of pitisukha, another level, even more pitisukha. So let's read it out. Now a mendicant might wish, as the placing of the mind and keeping it connected are stilled, may I enter and remain in the second absorption, which has rapture and bliss, born of stillness, born of samadhi, born of immersion, if you like, with internal clarity and confidence, unified mind without placing the mind and keeping it connected. Let them focus closely on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. So here, the what is called vitakka vichara, placing of the mind and keeping it connected, this is gone. They are stilled. And for this reason, because this is stilled, it means that now you attain the full samadhi. Samadhi means stillness in this case. It is the complete samadhi. And that is why it is called internal confidence. It's internal confidence because you are no longer wavering as to the object of the pitisukha. You're fully on that object. So you are fully fully immersed, fully stilled. And this then becomes this new kind of bliss, the rapture and bliss born of immersion. The mind is unified. Unified here means that there is no movement anymore. It has come completely together. There's only one thing happening. There's no changes in your perception. The perception is unified. This is the second jhana. And these are things that you have never experienced, anything like this. It's like you are entering a different reality, a reality that is, of course, wonderful, and it kind of gives rise to a sense of meaning and purpose that you never ever had, and you can never actually find in any ordinary kind of existence. But it doesn't stop there. This is the amazing thing. It goes on. Now, a mendicant might wish, with the fading away of rapture, now the piti, the rapture, fades away. May I enter and remain in the third absorption, where I will remain with equanimity, mindful, aware, personally experiencing the bliss of which the noble ones declare. Equanimous and mindful, you dwell in bliss. If you want to get to the third jhana, practice mindfulness of breathing. It takes you to the third jhana. The piti is gone. All that is left is bliss, the sukha. And it goes further. A mendicant might wish, giving up of pleasure and pain and the ending of former happiness and sadness, may I enter and remain in the fourth absorption, the fourth jhana, without pleasure or pain, with pure equanimity and mindfulness. Again, let them practice this stillness due to mindfulness of breathing. This is where all happiness and pleasure and pain, all happiness and sadness is gone. All that is left is equanimity. Neither pleasure nor pain. The neutral kind of feeling. And this becomes a happiness beyond the previous happinesses. It's impossible to really imagine these things. I think the only way to get to see what this is to for experiencing them here. But this is kind of what you have ahead of you. It's fascinating, isn't it? And it's like sometimes just knowing what the path is about, what kind of results can come from this path, is already very exciting and very extraordinary. Just knowing that such things are possible is already very uplifting. People do experience these things, and because people do experiencing them, and the Buddha explains them, we kind of... it's hard to reject them, yeah, and you kind of feel drawn to this extraordinary path of Buddhism. And all you have to do is to do, watch the breath, follow these constructions in the Anapanasati Sutta, and as you do that, these are the results you can expect. It doesn't stop there. Now let's take this path all the way to the very end, yeah, all the way to the final kind of beyond everything else. Now, a mendicant might wish going totally beyond perceptions of form with the ending of perception of impingement, not focusing on perceptions of diversity. Aware that space is without bounds, may I enter and remain in the dimension of boundless space. Let them closely focus on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. So this is called the infinite space, yeah. Dimension of infinite space, or the sphere, or the plane of infinite space, something like that. It is beyond the fourth jhana. These are called the immaterial attainments. They're not really required on the path, but they're often mentioned in the suttas as a kind of completion of the samadhi aspect, if you like, taking it all the way to its conclusion. Now, mendicant, my wish going totally beyond the dimension of infinite space, aware that consciousness is without bounds. May I enter and remain in the dimension of boundless consciousness. So let them focus closely on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. Now, mendicant might wish going totally beyond the dimension of boundless consciousness, aware that there is nothing at all. May I enter and remain in the plane of nothingness. So let them closely focus on samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. The awareness that there is nothing. It's weird, isn't it? You perceive that there is nothing. There actually still is something, because the perception of nothingness is still there. But you perceive that there is nothing. Now, a mendicant might wish, going totally beyond the dimension of nothingness, may I enter and remain in the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception. Let them closely focus on the immersion, the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. Neither perception nor non-perception. It is like you don't know whether you are perceiving or not. It is so incredibly subtle that you are verging on the ending of absolutely everything. These are the most refined perceptions, the most refined states that are possible in samsaric existence. So that's why they are hard to describe. Yeah, and the Buddha is using words here that are difficult to really know exactly what is meant. And the only way to really know what these things are is obviously to experience them. So now, what happens next? We're still not finished. It's kind of amazing. It's not finished yet. It's kind of extraordinary. So now, mendicant might wish, going totally beyond the dimension of neither perception nor non-perception, may I enter and remain in the cessation of perception and feeling. Let them closely focus on the samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. So this is where you come to really the end of the path as far as meditation is concerned. Because when perception and feeling cease, there is no more perception, there's no more feeling of any kind. There's not even neutral feeling, right? There's absolutely nothing. At this point, consciousness itself has ceased. And of course, when everything has ceased, when all your experience has ceased, there is no further to go. Because you have reached the limit of what can be let go of, what can end. There is nothing more to be ended at this point. And that's why this is the This is the end of the path of samadhi. And of course, with that ending of the of everything comes also very profound insight. Yeah, because when you once you know that things can come to complete end, and once you know and you can compare that to things being present, you understand suffering. You understand everything, all experience is suffering by comparison. At this point, you are willing, not only willing, you want to give up all experience because you have seen it is a problem. And at that point, your desire to exist, your craving to exist comes to an end because you understand that existence really is only a problem. And this is really what you are seeing here. And all of this can only really be understood through the lens of non-self, because as long as we have a self, we have a vested interest in existence. And take away that vested interest, only then is it possible to see the full suffering of experience itself. This is what the Buddha is saying here. And I don't know if you that this makes any sense to you, and maybe it doesn't, because it is really so different from how we normally think about life and existence and all of these kind of things. This is what he says. And of course, because the Buddha says it, it is worth taking seriously. So the answer to approaching these kind of ideas is just to do your ordinary meditation. See where it leads you. See it getting the little happinesses on the ordinary meditation and understanding that this is just an extension of that, an extrapolation of that, taking it to its logical conclusion. And this is then what happens. Then the Buddha goes on. When mindfulness of breathing has been developed and cultivated in this way, if they feel a pleasant feeling, they understand that it is impermanent, unreliable, that they are not attached to it, and that they don't take pleasure in it. You have seen how everything comes to an end, how everything, nothing really is fundamentally there, fundamentally behind this. All feeling can come to a stop, and because of that, you understand that these things have nothing to do with you, and they are just phenomena that arise through cause and conditions. Because of that, they are impermanent. When they feel a painful feeling, they understand that it is impermanent, that they are not attached to it, that they don't take pleasure in it. When they feel a neutral feeling, they understand that it is impermanent, that they are not attached to it, that they don't take pleasure in it. You have seen everything can cease, because everything can cease, it is all non-self, and the cessation is superior to any of these things being present. So you lose your attachment to these things, you don't take pleasure in them. You have become freed from all the feelings, etc. If they feel a pleasant feeling, they feel it detached. You are freed from it. If they feel a painful feeling, they feel it detached. If they feel a neutral feeling, they feel it detached. Feeling the end of the body approaching, they understand, I feel the end of the body approaching. You can see that the end of the life, the end of the body is happening. Feeling the end of life approaching, they understand, I feel the end of life approaching. Remember now we're dealing with the arahant. We're dealing with someone who has reached full awakening, right? This is how you, what happens when you go through this kind of process. And they understand, when my body breaks up and my life has come to an end, everything that is felt, since I no longer take pleasure in it, will become cool right here. Siddhi bhava, siddhi bhuto, everything becomes cool right here. The feelings come to an end. Everything stops because you don't take pleasure in it. There's no craving for it. When everything comes to an end, it just becomes cool, like embers becoming cool and just disappearing. And then comes the simile that explains this exactly what is going on. Suppose an oil lamp depended on oil and a wick to burn. As the oil and the wick are used up, it would be extinguished due to lack of fuel. The fuel is gone. In the same way, feeling the end of the body approaching, they understand, I feel the end of the body approaching. Feeling the end of life approaching, they understand, I feel the end of life approaching. They understand, when my body breaks up and my life has come to an end, everything that's felt, since I no longer take pleasure in it, will become cool right here. So just like an oil lamp, yeah, it gets extinguished. In other words, the flame is gone. There's nothing really carrying on when the flame is gone. The thing that made it burn, the wick and the oil, have come to an end. In the same way, the thing that makes life carry on, yeah, that makes us burn, so to speak, is craving. And because of that craving and the upadana being the fuel for life as well, upadana means the attachment and the holding on to things in the world. Because you don't attach to anything, you don't hold on to anything, the fuel for future existence has been used up, come to an end, eliminated, extinguished. And so life itself also comes to an end as a consequence. Everything becomes cool. And of course, cool is a good word, yeah? Everyone wants to be cool, right? So this is the higher kind of coolness. And you become cool in the highest kind of sense. So there you are. That is the... This is very profound, yeah? These are some of the most profound teachings in the suttas about what happens as a consequence when you practice the path fully all the way to the end. And so take it just as a insight or an understanding of how the Buddha saw the world, and then carry on with your practice, and just keep this at the back of your mind, yeah? You don't really have to worry too much about it, but just keep it as a kind of inspiration, something to move towards, the highest happiness in existence, the ending of all suffering. This is what this really is about. Okay, so that is... all for now, so please continue enjoying yourself, and we'll see you back at 7 o'clock this evening. Yeah.